Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. The fact that I am here hosting this program tonight and that you are here listening to it means that we did not make the cut when it comes to the rapture. Maybe some people were taken away, but you and I were not up to par, it appears. I know there are a lot of wisecracks today about the false rapture prediction for last night. You know, in general, I try not to poke fun at anybody's religious beliefs, whatever floats your boat, no matter how wacky it or those beliefs might seem on the surface. And like most of you, while I wasn't all that concerned that the world as we know it was coming to an end 24 hours ago, I'm at least a little bit relieved that it didn't happen for the simple reason that there's simply too much to do to give up on this earthly life right now. Too many mysteries to explore, too many people to get to know, too many lessons to learn. And in particular, I'm really glad things didn't hit the fan last night because it would mean we wouldn't have the chance to hear this episode of Coast to Coast AM. And I'm telling you, I am really jazzed about it. My producer, Chris Boros, and I have been trying to set this up for a while, and Chris kept after it. The result is we'll be joined in just a minute or so by the incomparable Shirley MacLaine, an acclaimed actress, accomplished author, and speaker. And if you've read any of her best-selling books, you know she's a thinker, a seeker of human truths. And she's basically fearless in bearing her soul and beliefs so the rest of us can digest and process the information and see if it works in our own lives. And by lives, I mean our current incarnations, of course, but other lives as well, past and future. Shirley MacLaine has a new book out. It's called I'm All Over That and Other Confessions. It's funny, poignant, and as usual for her books, jam-packed with lessons that she's learned during a very productive life, this life, that is. She's had others. We'll hear about those. Ms. MacLaine is here for the first hour. And then later this evening, Paul Von Ward will join us to talk about the scientific search for evidence of reincarnation. And if that seems like a contradiction in terms, science and reincarnation in the same sentence, then you haven't heard Paul Von Ward before. Should be one great show. I don't want to waste one more minute of this hour with me blabbing. So we'll take this break. And when we come back, the one and only Shirley MacLaine, live here on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Shirley MacLaine is one of the great actresses of our time or any time. She has 10 Golden Globes, 3 Emmys, 6 Academy Award nominations, including an Oscar for Best Actress in Terms of Endearment. She starred on Broadway. She's an accomplished speaker and businesswoman. But perhaps her most meaningful contributions to the world have come in the form of the 12 books she's written. Many of you know them well. Out on a Limb was one of her bestsellers. She's explored her own past lives, her ongoing investigation of reincarnation, but has also shared with us her interest in UFOs and other intelligences. Her new book, I'm All Over That, is a hoot. It's a very fun read, packed with candid stories about celebrities and showbiz royalty, but more importantly, about her own search for truth and meaning in the world. I strongly recommend you get a copy and read it. Shirley MacLaine, thanks so much for being with us here tonight.
Hey, George. You have such a wonderfully commanding, confident voice.
Well, I'm just showing off because I'm thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
You know, reading the book, two impressions came to mind, impressions about you. And one is about how curious you are about the world around you, about inner and outer truths. You know, at this stage of your life, no one would blame you for kicking back or toning it down a bit, but that's not you, apparently. And the other impression is how comfortable you are in your own skin. I know you've taken a lot of grief over the years about your beliefs and your interests, your inquiring mind, and yet I don't detect one tiny shred of bitterness or resentment. You seem pretty happy with the path this life has taken so far.
Well, I do feel that way, but I haven't honestly felt much bitterness. I don't know why. I think Look, I'm more self-centeredly interested in my own search than I am in what anyone thinks of me. I try not to be offensive, but my curiosity is what I suppose, is my lifeblood. And I've been like this since I was a kid. I've also been a kind of a mystic since I was a kid. So I'm just being basically true to myself. My dad was a thinker, philosopher. He had never finished his master's degree at Johns Hopkins, but he was into philosophy and psychology. So we had that kind of discussion going between us all the time. Mother was Canadian, and of course you never knew what she was thinking because of that. So I've been the opposite. I take after my dad, and also in my search for what people mean and what people are thinking comes from a mother who never really told me.
It seems in the same vein of how you let some of the jokes or stuff that have come your way roll off your back, that you are pretty tolerant about people's own searches for truth, that you're not trying to sell anything to anyone. You're not insisting that anyone believes what you believe, because I guess you figure that people will eventually come around to understanding the big picture themselves one way or another.
Yeah, just to understand themselves. The only thing I've been insistent on, if people make jokes about me, is that the jokes are funny. So whenever Johnny or Jay or some of the guys would decide to do Shirley MacLaine jokes after I'd written a book or something, they would call me and we would write jokes together. One thing I couldn't stand was jokes that didn't elicit real laughter. And a lot of those guys don't understand the spiritual meaning of things enough to make certain that their punchline works, you know?
Well, it makes a lot of people nervous, you know, to even consider this stuff.
Why is that, for goodness sakes? When we know we're at the precipice of something, we know we've got to understand what it is we've been doing and address ourselves to the future as to what we should do. My goodness, it seems to me that we should be looking at the foibles of religion and looking at the real truth of our own consciousness. Is there anything else?
This past week, a friend of yours, someone you greatly admire, Dr. Stephen Hawking, came out with a declaration of sorts. He said something to this effect. He said, a belief in heaven or an afterlife is just for people who are afraid of the dark. They're afraid of death. There is no heaven. There is no afterlife. It's like when you pull the plug on a computer. You die and that's it. You know, from reading your book, though, it sounds like Dr. Hawking might have other beliefs in private.
Well, he just might. When I would go up to Cambridge to see him, oh, it was such a hoot to see how he affected everybody around him. But there in his office, over his desk, were two pictures, one of Albert Einstein and the other of Marilyn Monroe. And I said, what is this? And with his chair, he said, the curves of Miss Monroe are as beautiful as the curves of the universe. And then later, I mean, he showed me a picture of himself, and there were lots of, cartoons done about him and his scientific research and so forth. And there was one alluding to him and his disbelief in God. And he looked up at me and said, those who think I do not believe in God do not know me. Now, he might believe in God but not believe in heaven.
Well, what about reincarnation? It sounded to me from the book that it at least entertains the idea that he might be the reincarnation of a very famous scientist.
That's what he told me. He was born on the day, 300 years later, that Sir Isaac Newton died. And he does hold the Isaac Newton chair at Cambridge. No, he doesn't just think it. He believes it. He knows it. And he shared that with me, and we discussed it. So, but that's not anything to do with heaven. I'm not sure that what he's saying are contradictory. I think that he might not believe in heaven, could believe in God, got that impression from him. I don't think he has the laws of cause and effect, which I think he has been concerned about over years. You know, that whole law for 30 years that he was maintaining that the information, all information is not permanently kept, that information can disappear and into the black holes. And he had a scientific formula to prove that. While others didn't believe that, he did. But then he did say 30 years later that he was wrong. So he has the capacity to admit that he's wrong sometimes. But I sent him an email. I haven't yet gotten a response because he's talking about nothing is faster than the speed of light. So I sent him an email. Do you think the speed of love thought, is faster than the speed of light? And I haven't yet received his answer.
Well, if he doesn't believe in God or heaven, at least he entertains the idea about reincarnation. And I wonder if he were to say something publicly about that, is that enough to bar him from the Scientists Hall of Fame, like Pete Rose can get into baseball's Hall of Fame because he violated some sacrosanct standard? And I ask the question in this context about science. Is science is a tool for discerning truth about things like these topics? You know, science has sort of become its own religion, and it exists and limits itself by these very specific rules that don't allow it to explore other kinds of things, other exotic topics.
Sure. I mean, religion was the jailer of man's minds for many, many hundreds of years, and now you could say that science is the jailer of man's minds. But the rules with which we decide something is provable, I think, are shifting, and I think that's what quantum physics is all about, because these rules that if you can thump on it, you can believe it, they're beginning to shift. And I think that the formulas for the definition of proof have shifted, and that's because of quantum physics.
And so then, is science, quantum physics, an appropriate tool for resolving these kinds of mysteries that fascinate you and the folks here at Coast to Coast, past lives, UFOs? Or is the,
well,
is it's
not enough. It's not enough for me, but I think he's concerned about the scientific community, and I think the world that he moves in requires that kind of scrutiny. But the limitations of how you prove it are so narrow. There's so many other systems of proof that have to do more with consciousness than they do with formulas and scientific principles, you know.
What do you think about this prospect, that maybe it's all about the journey, that we're not really supposed to understand all there is about past lives or future lives, that that these, what you'd call paranormal phenomena, are meant to challenge us to see beyond the immediate paradigm and think to ourselves, and it's about the exploration, not necessarily getting there.
No, exactly. I mean, the journey itself is the is the quest. The journey itself is where you find your satisfaction, your curiosity, your involvement with being alive. But I don't want to say I'm not supposed to know everything. I don't like that idea. I like the idea that it's unlimited to me, and if I could just find more ways, which probably is a new way of saying, if I could just imagine what might be. I mean, if we didn't have imagination, we would have nothing. And I think that in the end, everything is what we imagine it to be. That's, I think, something that Stephen would talk about. But if you can't prove that imagination is real, then he wouldn't have a solution. But when you start looking at that, it is so much fun. Anything you can imagine is imaginable. And because I'm an artist, basically, and because I love the idea of imagination, that's what keeps me so entertained. I'm really having a good time in asking all my questions, and each answer I get is just a springboard for another question.
Well, that really comes across. It really comes across in the book, anyway.
Yeah. My first book that I wrote, I was at Norton instead of Simon & Schuster, and the editor said, why don't you just write a book and the title is Why? That's all.
Let's talk about
it. I'm having a great time with it. I don't want to stop. I'm really fascinated. What does 2012 mean? What does it mean if we really do ruin the world? What all of that is? I see it almost as theater. I'm very involved with this theme of everything is really show business. Everything. You know, we have a little saying, there are two businesses in the world, everybody else's business and show business. And I'm beginning to think, this is more than true. And so we like villains and we like good guys and we like first, second, and third acts. And we like all sorts of structures to be entertained by. And if we could just look at life, I mean, even with all of its trials and tribulations, if you can look at it to some extent as an entertainment, it becomes really fascinating and less soul-searing.
Well, tell me that in the context of 2012 that you mentioned, how that is showbiz and what you think is going to happen.
Well, I mean, it's a huge science fiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think from what I've learned, these are facts. The end of a 26,000-year time period is going to occur. That's what the Mayans were talking about. Well, that's also the end of the zodiac. And if the end of the zodiac is the end of the influence that the celestial bodies have had on our consciousness over a 26,000-year time period, that's no joke. Okay, so now we have the alignment that this solar system will be in direct alignment with the center of the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. That's no joke. I mean, think of the gravitational pull. We can feel it. We can feel it already in the weather because it's been coming into alignment since 87. Okay, apparently that the distance between this solar system and the center of the galaxy is 26,000 light years. And apparently the average age of a human, average age, is 26,000 days. Well, look at the numerology there. Look at the perfection potential. And imagine what that will do to human consciousness when the apex of this alignment is reached on December 21, 2012. I mean, I think that our consciousness will have a shift in its understanding. In my opinion, it'll be broadened, expanded, how we relate to. And it might, by the way, be the end of the karmic drama of our lifetime after lifetime over 26,000 years, since it is the end of the zodiac. Wouldn't that be interesting?
So that could be some good outcome date.
Yeah. I think there's no doubt there's going to be a new horizon, a new Jerusalem, a new way of seeing ourselves and seeing each other and seeing the future. I think it's going to happen gradually. I mean, look at what's happening every day with weather and with attitudes and with different processes and how to be peaceful and how can we get together and still tell the truth? You know, that's beginning to happen. What's interesting to me is what happens when you have really fundamentalist, rather negative thinking? How does that shift? And how will those minds be on the 21st, 2012? What happens to them?
I'd love to hear your take on evil. I mean, obviously, there is evil in our world. People do evil things to their fellow humans. But I wanted to know if you think evil exists on its own, either as an energy, if not an entity. I mean, I know in the book you speak disparagingly about the existence of something like Satan or the devil. But what about evil itself?
You know, there is a theory. I guess you could say I'm interested in exploring it, that the dark side of reality, because evil could be lived spelled backward, you know, it could be just that which is without light. And if there is such a thing as a kind of virus-like darkness, maybe that's what antimatter is, which resents the notion that that light has basically prevailed in so many sectors of the universe. But we know that antimatter occupies much more real estate than light does.
Shirley MacLaine, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that music tells us we need to take a break. That's my fault for asking that complicated question without enough time. We'll pick it up after the break. Stay with us, everyone. Shirley MacLaine, author of the new book, I'm Over All That and Other Confessions, is our guest. We're going to UFOs and a lot more after this on Coast to Coast AM. We'll explore Shirley MacLaine's views of what lies ahead for the human race after this break. And in addition, in this new book, I'm Over All That and Other Confessions, she mentions her conversations with Jimmy Carter, former President Carter, who, as we know, has an interest in UFOs, has said that he was going to open up the UFO files if he was elected and then did not do that. But I think he might have told Shirley MacLaine a couple of things that that have not appeared in print before. We'll get into that and a lot more right after this on Coast to Coast. Shirley MacLaine, before the break, I asked you your take on evil, and I don't want to paraphrase this incorrectly, but it sounded like you were saying that evil may manifest itself in the form of antimatter?
Well, it could be, don't know, that there is a polarity, not under what we see as God, but an alternative parallel reality polarity. I don't know. I'm just looking at that. For the last couple of years, I've been wondering about that. Therefore, it's possible that some of these home worlds that we have learned about self-destruction on those home worlds were affected by this other dark parallel reality. Or they perhaps just destroyed themselves like we're doing. And everything is under one creative source. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
You say in the book, you write, I do not believe in evil aliens, the kinds that are portrayed in movies, invading Earth, conquering us, here to eat us, whatever. Do you have any insight into the existence of ETs or aliens or other intelligences derived from some of the well-connected officials and elected officials you've known? For example, Jimmy Carter. It always seems like Jimmy Carter has been close to spilling some beans on aliens and ETs, but has always stopped short. And I'm wondering, did he ever confide in you anything about what he knows?
Well, I don't think he'd mind me telling you this. He called me down to Plains to talk about it because he knew that I had done a lot of research, knew a lot of people who had had contacts, been aboard, etc. And he wanted simply to know what are they here for. And I said, from what I'd learned, they are here to teach us that war is ridiculous because the soul never dies. Therefore, you're not killing anyone. And he perked up at that. And he said, well, so what do you mean? I said, well, the soul, from what I've learned, is on a journey through time to learn about itself. And each time it comes into a physical re-embodiment, it learns more lessons. And he looked at me quizzically and said, are you talking about reincarnation? And I said, "That's yes, I am, Mr. President. That's what they're telling me. Reincarnation is real, and the soul doesn't die. It just changes form, comes back again." And then the wall went down, George. He did not want to discuss. He said, I'm a born-again Christian, and I don't believe that. And I said, but you're born again. And he did not want to discuss it. After I told him what I had learned their mission was, which is, please, you're not killing anyone. You're just incurring more karma. So war should be stopped. He wasn't... He wasn't insisting on war will always be with us, but he did not want to discuss, because of his religious beliefs, that reincarnation is a fact. I found that limited. I found it short-sighted, and I was really sorry that that was the end of the discussion. And this is why I think that we have to take another look at what religion is teaching us for whatever reasons. I mean, when they had the Council of Nicaea in 553 A.D. And Empress Theodora wanted to strike all the teachings of reincarnation from the Bible as it existed at that point, which was written as a result of the teachings of Origen, by the way, the great Greek philosopher. And she understood that if reincarnation was a truth, that that meant that mankind was in charge of its own destiny. And she wanted to be in charge of mankind's destiny. Because if the laws of cause and effect are the true laws, then what we put out returns to us. And if we were taught that, our behavior would be decidedly better. Well, she, I think, and I've always wanted to do a movie on her. Gore Vidal wrote a script that was sort of all right about it. He was very interested in this woman, too. I mean, she is probably the reason why we're having such troubles in the Western world now, because she made certain that the Council of Nicaea's deck was stacked with her own. The Pope boycotted it, by the way, because the Pope at that point, 553 A.D., was teaching the teachings of Origen. And she struck him. And so, okay, having that gone from the Bible means then where are the permanent cosmic laws?
So you make the point a couple of times in the book that reincarnation is not at odds with a belief in God, that most of the world already believes in reincarnation, that Christians shouldn't have to. Somebody like Jimmy Carter should not have to close his mind to that it was sort of the teachings of the Christian church were sort of artificially manipulated way back, that reincarnation should be part of Christian beliefs.
Well, I think so. It certainly was originally. And, you know, he is such a good man. He does so much wonderful work. He truly is a Prince of Peace. I was a little stunned at his agreement to be short-sighted and close his mind. Listen, he did see a UFO, and he wrote about it when he was governor of Georgia. So he understands, and he told me that when he ever asked his intelligence people, what is this? Let's dig into this. I want to know about this. He was told, no, a president is on a need-to-know basis, and you're just there for 4 years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You know,
he tried.
Another friend of yours in politics, Dennis Kucinich, was running for president. I guess this is a lesson in what even asking questions about UFOs can get you. And he told a story. He was asked immediately about it. Perhaps the question was raised just to eliminate him as a serious candidate. Hey, Dennis Kucinich, did you really see a UFO when you're hanging out with Shirley MacLaine? As if just an association with you is enough to blackball him.
I don't know. I think it was, the guy on CNN with the beard. He's the one who asked the question. And I don't know if it was to make Dennis look stupid, but I held my breath as to what Dennis would say. And I was so proud of him when he said, that's right, I saw it. I don't know what it was. It was the newsman who, Wolf Blitzer, so it was, who said, did you see a UFO? And he said, well, it looked like something I'd never seen before, but I don't know what it was. That's what Jimmy Carter says now, too. Oh, come on, we know they're here. We know they're around. My God, it's the best-kept secret in human intelligence. I just wish they'd tell us why they won't tell us.
Of course, we've read much and heard much over the years about your past lives. I did not know until I read this book that you had been a harem girl at some point. I also had no idea about the incarnation or possible incarnation as a famous figure from American history, Robert Morris.
Yeah, that really has influenced me more than anything. I'm from Virginia. I was brought up with the Founding Fathers' blood running in my veins. I'm very, very patriotic. Therefore, that's motivating all of my feelings of what we do wrong these days. The founding fathers would turn over in their graves to a large extent. But I believe that I was Robert Morris, who financed the American Revolution. And there is so much about him that is like me even today. So, yes, I'm proud of that. And one of my great fears is being penniless. He died penniless in a pauper's prison. And that, God, that to me would just be the worst. First of all, being in prison. Second of all, being totally penniless. I'm not over that yet.
Yeah, that's one of the things you say in the book. You're not over money. It's not like you're money hungry or something, but you want to have enough to be comfortable. You're self-sufficient. Yeah. I was surprised to learn your home is self-sufficient. You grow your own food.
Yeah. Grow my own food, solar, wind. Oh, yeah. I'm very, I'm in conversation with the earth, and therefore I don't, anyway, I want to be in harmony with it all and use the sun, sure.
I mentioned about the harem girl. Do you know how many times you've been around, or do you have a suspicion?
No,
how many?
I don't know. So many. I mean, I went through a past life session where I got into, I mean, they were like flashes, very, very real and emotional flashes. Couldn't even count them all. I think I wrote them down in one of my books and described them like quick flashes, but I can't tell you how many.
And are you
I
still
do a lot of that work out at my ranch in Abiquiu. I have past life facilitators out there, and I have people come in. We do five-day workshops. Very interesting, life-altering stuff.
Are you still discovering new past lives?
Oh, sure. I think we've all been around millions of years. Probably one of the reasons that I'm so interested in life on other planets is because I've lived there, and that's in my consciousness. I remember 10 years old lying on the lawn of my house in Virginia, looking through a telescope, thinking, I'd like to go home one day to one of those places. It never occurred to me that I wasn't.
So some of these are conscious memories. They're not something you you derive from hypnosis sessions.
No, I don't like doing it with hypnosis because you can't get in touch with it as easily as you do when you're conscious. And some of the things that I've gotten in touch with, I've worked out. The characters that show up from my past in some of my lives are the ones that I need to work out stuff with today. If you're under hypnosis, your subconscious is at work. I like working with my conscious mind.
Do you know if you have to come back? Do you think you will?
Gosh, I don't know. One thing I am I'm really disturbed and depressed often at what I'm seeing happen to the world, its civilization, who we are, our values, how inundated we are with materialism and so forth, ruled by fear, et cetera. I don't know. I like not being with animals. Because they're unconcerned with that stuff. They just want to eat something. And I juxtapose being depressed and having a lot of fun with what I'm uncovering.
You mentioned
that's my polarity.
You mentioned in the book fear in the name of religion, fear in the name of security, in particular some of your adventures with the TSA and traveling and how fear seems to be the ultimate tool for manipulating and controlling the public.
Just awful. When I go into an airport and I see how dumbed down everybody is, they're just saluting and falling right in line with being searched and being accused. That drives me crazy. But then I'm a revolutionary spirit, so that would not be something I like happening to me. And I won't go through that cancer machine. I've been through a lot of pat-downs. And, I'm learning my little dialogue that I can say to these people who are going underneath my bra and my panties and this and that, trying to find out what explosives I'm carrying. It's kind of funny now.
Are you, I know you're generally optimistic by nature, but are you optimistic about where we're heading as a species? From what I read in the book, It sounds like you have some doubts. You mentioned again about Stephen Hawking, him speculating that maybe this is the end of humans as we know them, that once computers overtake the human brain, that we become something else. And you also mentioned when you were in Peru speaking to these shaman about a new species, a new type of human that might already be here among us. Tell us about that and what you see in the future for our species.
Well, I am depressed. I'm not completely, I'm not satisfied with the way we're going. I think that's pretty obvious. But I also think there is some breeding going on, some kind of new human being developed. I can feel some of the young people coming in who are different than my generation. I can feel them maybe, of course, we have all this trouble with technology smothering human communication. You know, you go to dinner and they're on their computers. But I think probably we're going to have to learn the human computer chip that we are with the technological human computer chip. Look, I do think there's going to be a reduction in population. We've been overpopulated for a long time. I don't know how that will happen. I don't know if Revelations is right or not. I don't know if it's going to be nature or disease or whatever. But we do have to have a reduction in population. And I don't know how to enact the Malthusian theory, but I think it might happen. And I really feel sad about that.
But I'm sorry.
We've not taken care with how many people we have. We've got too many.
This thing about the new humans, the luminous humans, mm-hmm. that were mentioned to you by the Peru shaman. Do you ever meet one?
Sometimes I meet young people, like 2 or 3 years old, and I think, "Ooh, that's one of them." Yeah, I do.
And yet, young people are a source of consternation to you and to everyone else with a brain in their head. You mentioned about one of the things you're over are young people who are rude with technology. People get so wrapped up in.
Those are people like 15 and over. But sometimes I see a luminous human being who's 2 or 3. That's the.
Yeah. I understood. You do get bothered by people who, as you mentioned, go out to dinner and they're on their cell phone or they're on their computer the whole time. It seems like these great technological tools for communication have been created and we communicate less face to face.
Yeah. All that we need to learn about how to communicate with each other, we're being bypassed. We're being diverted from by technology. And, you know, sometimes I wonder, is that deliberate? What is happening there? Are we just being fed that which is keeping us from getting together? I'm interested in this Jesse Ventura. I've never met Jesse, but so much of what he says sounds right to me. Does it to you?
Yeah, I think he's a really interesting character. And I know that's the problem with Jesse, the Governor Ventura, is you're not sure how much of it is character and how much is him. I think most of it is him. I had a chance to meet him.
Well, the fact that he was a Navy SEAL would make me think, let's look at this really seriously. Because those guys are extremely addicted to the truth and to the patriotism by which they are employed. So I don't know. I don't know what I think about his. Your advertising tonight is about him not believing that 9/11 was an accident. Well, he says a lot of stuff that I find very, very, very intriguing. And I'd like to meet him and discuss stuff that he hasn't yet written about.
Yeah, he's a force of nature. Well, like you.
Yep. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he really is. And he's seen a lot, and I find him rather credible. Okay, so he's a character. Aren't we all?
You know, some of the best stuff in this book is about your stories with people like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra, the Rat Pack, which is, you know, if I could have lived in a different era, it would be Las Vegas back when those guys were here. You were one of the gang. You were the mascot, right?
I sure was. We had so much fun. Oh, my God. That kind of person will not come around again. They just were completely authentic to themselves and to the moment that they were living in. That's why the audiences love them. They would do stuff on the stage that nobody today would even think of, much less do. And that's where they were in real life. Very, very funny. Very, very fastidious and almost, you know, addicted to looking swell all the time. But they what I loved was their casting political correctness to the winds, and what they did was be themselves.
Shirley MacLaine, thank you so much for being here. You're welcome to stay. We've got time for you, but you can decide that and talk to the producer afterward. But the book is called I'm Over All That and Other Confessions. It's a wonderful book. It was wonderful talking to you if you're leaving us now. And
George, I'm going to go to bed. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this. I really love talking to you. But we did a radio show, didn't we?
You called me about it. I think we did have a conversation. But I'll have you back as soon as you want to come back. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back with your calls, and we'll be talking with our guest, Paul Von Ward.